We understand that most dads feel undervalued and misunderstood. The goal is for you to be encouraged through real conversations about the value of fatherhood in different stages of life. The list of resources for moms who have lost a child is great. In this episode, we address the emotional journey of a father through the loss of a child. Thank you for engaging in our world's biggest small group, Facing Fatherhood. I'm Pastor Chad, a father of five kids and the Director of Ministry Innovation for Hope Media Group. And with me today is Zach Bain, the VP of Digital and formerly on The Wally Show on Way FM Radio. So welcome, Zach.
Thank you.
I'm giving the long intro because I really want to tee it up for you to just jump right in and just tell us the story of losing your first child.
Yeah, so it was our first pregnancy, our first experience with that. At the 20-week ultrasound, we went in and just so excited. It was the day we were going to find out the gender. And the mood of the tech just was a little, like, you could sense something was wrong, you know, like things weren't right. And I'm the optimist in the relationship. So I'm like, it's fine. Don't worry. And then she told us some of the things she was seeing and concerned about, signs that he had something called trisomy 18, which is very similar to Down's syndrome. Down's is an extra chromosome. Technically, I think trisomy 21. So just an extra chromosome of the 18th one.
Okay.
So it manifests itself in all sorts of ways, like spots on the brain, and one of his intestines was growing outside of his body, and just all kinds of ways his body was jacked up, heart problems. And it was very like the phrase they used clinically was incompatible with life or something like that.
Wow.
So we had tons of doctor's appointments after that where they checked things out. And it was very much like, you're never going to give birth to this boy. You're not going to get to meet him. If by chance he survives all the way through pregnancy, he'll probably die within an hour or so. And so the next 20 weeks of pregnancy were, it was a weird experience because like you walk through stores, my wife is pregnant, and because everybody is a great human being, they're like, congratulations, that's so exciting. And you're like, and they ask you questions about the baby room or whatever, and you have to decide, do I drop the anvil on them right now?
Yeah.
Oh, my baby's not going to live. You know, all those questions are kind of painful.
Now, I've had other friends who've actually had a similar issue. Was there also pressure from your doctors or other things just to end the pregnancy and that?
It was presented once.
Okay.
And we were pretty, like, we didn't really even consider that.
Okay.
Like, we always had the stance between us. It was like that's a God decision. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to force the issue, even though the science tells us he's not going to live. That's God's decision. If he wants to play that card, that's on him. I'm not taking responsibility for that.
Well, and we live in such a society where with medical things like that, there is a lot of pressure from science that we do play God in some of those circumstances. And so it can be one of the difficult things for a couple to actually go through, is not only finding out that you have a child that has a severe issue like that, but also then making the decision for the next 20 weeks, which... you don't know what's going to happen.
It gave me a whole lot more sympathy for people who make the other decision.
Yeah.
Now, just as a human walking through that experience, because 20 weeks of people asking questions and going through the pains and the downsides of pregnancy without the expectation of joy and payoff, that, you know, I'm going through this pain, but it's going to be so worth it, you know. But it was weird. Like, so when it came time to give birth, we went to the hospital. We didn't even have a car seat.
Oh, you know,
you're going to give birth and you're never going to take your son home from there. As it turned out, he survived birth, survived through the night. And they were eventually like, I mean, you can go home if you want. And we're like, okay, we don't have a car seat. Just hold him. You'll be fine. So that was weird. But to get time with him at home was amazing. He survived a total of 36 hours. You know, people asked us ahead of time, would you rather he die beforehand? And you don't know what you want. And it doesn't matter because it's not your choice anyway.
Yeah.
But man, we were so thankful that we had that time with him, because like we have friends, very close friends, who went through the same situation. And it wasn't that.
What is that period like between taking him home and then transpired from there?
In our story, I'm so glad we took the advice of our doctor who told us to reach out to a hospice. So he was under hospice care from the day he was born.
Okay.
From the second he was born. Everything was prearranged. So we knew all we had to do when he passed, and they assured us it would be a more like a fade out than like, and that was a big fear.
Yeah.
But it was more just a gentle fading away. But then you call one phone number and they call the funeral care to come make arrangements. And we could just focus on, like, our parents were in town calling them over. I think it was like 3 a.m.
Wow.
You know, and so we're having a little like memorial service in our living room. But we were so thankful we could just focus on grief and not on all the details that come with.
So what did it look like in the midst of your relationship with your wife, that grieving process? Because I feel like even as I'm preparing for talking with you about this today, there's not a, like a ton of resources about grieving for dads. This is a unique situation in that you did hold a living baby for a little bit. So it's not technically even like a miscarriage necessarily, although it could have been, I guess, in some ways too. You didn't know going into it, but all the resources are all focused on the grieving mom. And in all my years of church ministry, like, it's always been the moms who are just struggling through the miscarriage and not really even knowing what to do with the dad component. And since this is a podcast focusing on fatherhood, what was that experience for you?
Yeah, because it is a very different experience for the father than the mother. I think because he was a boy, there were certain things that hit me harder, you know, because I'm picturing the things I'm not going to get to do with my son in a way that I think a mother doesn't think. But on the other hand, she had 40 weeks of getting to know him by the way he kicked and moved. And like, so she had a very intimate relationship I didn't get to have or wouldn't understand. I think it was really helpful understanding early on, like, the even if the circumstances are the same, everybody's path and experience and grief is different. I don't think there's a right or wrong way to grieve. There's a wrong way to not grieve. Like, I think it's wrong to not grieve. But we had to give each other space to grieve in our own ways. We're different people and our experience was different, even though the circumstance was the same.
Do you feel like people cared for you differently, though?
Probably. I mean, I think I benefited from, I had a whole work family of people who I could talk to about things. My wife is a stay-at-home mom, so she didn't have that network of people that she could talk through a lot. Also, like, by nature, I'm a very open person and will share anything. And she, by nature, is a very private person. I'm fine with sharing details and stuff. And she didn't want to share with people. And I'm not saying one is right or wrong.
Yeah.
But it just led to a different experience.
That's interesting too, because like, you and I did not prepare ahead of time of you knowing my questions, but you kind of already delve into two questions. Is one that men, as I've read, this is not my experience because I've never lost a child, but men tend to be very internal and be quiet about it and internal. But you're saying for you, you were more of the processor where she kind of was the one who closed up about this.
I think so. I mean, also at the time I was on a radio show and I think I went back to work like 2 weeks later.
Okay.
And so it kind of in a good way forced you to talk through it. Do you remember those survival books you used to be able to get of like how to survive a bear attack? How to survive it? That I remember there's one, how to survive if your elevator starts free falling. And the answer is, and this is good for everyone to know, is to lay down on the floor so that when you hit the bottom, the weight is distributed all around. Instead of, I kind of took that approach to grief of like,
okay,
if I spread out the grief a little to the people around me and shared the hard things with them, and it helped lighten the burden on me. Like, there was some kind of offloading of grief to other people that I think was really helpful in my process. I remember a podcast I listened to with a guy named John Deloney, and he talks about how grief demands a witness. Like, to get through that grieving process, you have to be able to share with someone, and it's not that you need them to tell you magic words that are going to heal it and make it better. Like, that's not going to happen at all. But just the simple act of sharing it to others is, in my mind's image, is kind of like laying down in the elevator and spreading out the weight, distributing it to others to carry some of it as well.
And even as I look back at the scripture, because sometimes you're like, okay, I want to look into the scripture and see what does God say or what are some examples here? And I read the story of, and I'm sure you've read this too, in 2 Samuel chapter 12 of David losing a child. And it says that when David saw the people whispering, he realized what had happened. And he says, is the child dead? And yes, they replied, he's dead. Then David got up from the ground, washed himself, put on lotions and changed his clothes. He went to the tabernacle and worshiped the Lord. After that, he returned to the palace and was served food and ate. But you get this idea, like, here's David, this strong man after God's own heart, who just kind of, okay, once he's done praying about it, once it's over, he's able just to kind of, it seems like, go back to life. And yet we don't get all the full pieces of what his grief really looked like. But sometimes the pressure may be like, you know, give it to God and just go on from it. But you're saying like spreading it out, sharing about it, talking about it, is really been more helpful through the journey.
Yeah. Part of my process was I thought that the correct Christian place to be was where you accept it was God's will, but then also like to be okay with it and almost even endorse it, to say like that that's what faith meant. Like it meant arriving at a place where like, yes, God, this was a perfect plan. I choose it. Thank you for providing me this path. That was so good for me.
Yeah.
And I realized early on, I'm like, I will never get to that point where I can say, God, letting my child die was so beneficial for me. Thank you. I had to work toward a place where I could accept it. And I had to be able to identify the hard things, but also the good things, without feeling like I was trying to make a math equation where everything balanced out and made sense, and that it was like logically a good, helpful thing.
And there is that pressure though in Christian culture. And I've heard others on our team even say that in the midst of their grief, that there's always this pressure of, I got to apply Romans 8, like all things work together for good. And it's like, well, no, I don't see it was good that my son died.
Right.
There's nothing good in it. Good may have come from it, but that is not a good thing.
Yeah. I think the freedom to express that was really helpful, of like, yeah, good can come from this. I'm not going to call it good.
Yeah.
Because it's a horrible thing for your child to die.
What role did your church play in the midst of all this loss? And were there things that you wish the church would have done differently? Or were there hurt that came about from it? How did that walk itself out?
My church was great. It really helped me understand also, like, we were in a life group that we had joined a few months, I think, before finding this out. And another couple in our life group just a few months before us had a stillbirth in their family. So it was such a unique season to walk through with a group of people who shared experiences together on that. Understand, like, the time to build a shelter isn't during the storm. Like, the ideal time is before the storm comes, so that when the storm comes, you have protection. And I was so thankful that we were plugged into a church, a healthy church that loved us, and we had relationships, so that when the storm came, they really covered us. It, like, honestly, up to that point, I was like, I always felt guilty because my life was so easy. I never went through stuff like that. And I never understood meal trains. Like, it always seemed kind of silly to me. But then in the moment of grief, where like the task of making food seemed like the most difficult, like we could not do it, literally. Yeah. Like, it was so hard. And so to have food just magically show up on your doorstep, and they were all well advised about, like, you can drop it off. Don't expect to stand there and have a 30-minute conversation. Like, if they want to talk, fine, but drop it and go. And, you know, and they were so great. We had weeks of meals covered. I'm so thankful that God had us in a church of loving people. The pastor, the staff, everybody was very important in our process through that.
One of the things that I love the most about you is you always drop these illustrations that are so meaningful, but you just did it there with the, you don't build a shelter in the middle of a storm. And maybe you're not losing a child right now, but maybe something else is going to happen to you. We don't know when the storms are coming, is the other piece of it. So part of it is that we need to be able to be prepared ahead of time. And so church isn't the place I go when I'm in trouble. Church is the place that I start setting up good rhythms and the people that I engage with, so that when life gets rocky, they are there. Because I could tell you, I'm sure it'd be difficult if you had to find a church in the middle the chaos, because you're bringing all your hurt into it. You're looking for something specific. Your mind, like you're saying, why is cooking hard? Because your mind feels like spaghetti.
Yeah.
And you're so emotionally messed up. Can you imagine if you can't cook a meal for yourself, much less try to figure out a church and a culture and people and all these other pieces in the midst of grief? I can't even imagine that.
Yeah. We have a friend who very adamantly is like he hates the idea of life groups, and he's like, I don't need it. I'm fine. And I'm like, two things. One, you're not going to be fine sometime, and you don't know when that's coming. We're guaranteed there will be troubles in this life, so know that for you. But also, there are people in your church that are in the valleys that need you. And so they need your shelter. So I don't care if you don't like it.
Yeah. And I've reminded people, like, not every day is going to be your best day at church, but there's enough good days in there that get you, because there's going to be some really bad days and you need it to be filled in.
Right.
But we do live in a culture that's always looking for the best right now in every moment. And the moment that doesn't satisfy us, we got to move on to the next best thing. But that doesn't exist where you're working with a giant group of flawed people in one building.
Right. We want our churches to operate like Amazon, where if I need something, I can get it delivered within 3 hours.
Yeah.
But it's not like that. We don't know when the valleys are coming. We don't know where the mountaintops are. And so we need to take the long approach of, like, I need strong relationships with people moving in the same direction.
Kind of switching gears on that too. Like, you have since had another child.
Yes.
So I've heard. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Her name's Anna. She's 8 right now. She's amazing. So she was born a year and a half after Samuel.
Okay.
Which were, that was another discussion. Like, do you go into that quickly or what?
Yeah.
But we're so glad. We didn't plan her to happen that quick or anything like that, but that did actually really help in the process. Having another kid to pour into. But you bring all the experience you had with Samuel of, like, especially those early nights, every sound, every time she stopped breathing or like her chest didn't move for a second, you flip into this panic of like, oh no.
So you brought a lot of fear into the parenting.
Yeah, too. For sure. But we also, like, you know what? I don't feel bad about getting a video monitor. I don't feel bad at about getting the things that help us to, you know, you'll get a million pieces of parenting advice and some, oh, don't worry so much. We'll do what we need to because, you know, I've carried my dead child to the, I have that experience. So I'm not going to ignore that. In the earlier podcast, Wally was making fun of me for all the photos I take of Anna and stuff.
Yeah.
I really think a big chunk of that is after we lost Samuel for several years. And even now, I'm like, gosh, I would pay all the money in my bank account for one more video of Samuel, you know, because I can't go back and get it anymore. And that feeds into why I take so many photos of my daughter, because she's 8 right now. She will never be an 8-year-old after next year. Like this 8-year-old version of her is gone. So I want to capture it so I can have it and hold on to it and archive it and watch it again. Maybe that's not healthy, but, you know, allowing myself, you know, I'm paying for the cloud storage so I can keep all of these photos because it's such a, I think maybe a reaction to losing Samuel was like, I need to document as much as I can.
Having lost a child, I know others will be listening who maybe have lost a child. How has it changed maybe the way you talk to Anna, your daughter, about your son Samuel? Like, how do you talk to her about death? Is there talk about it? Like, does it bring you joy to talk about it? Like, how does that fit into the equation now? Because obviously there was grief before, but now how do you live that out or live out Samuel's memory?
Man, I want to know the right answer to this, because that's one of those things that I'm like, I have no idea if we're doing this right.
Okay.
So we had told her about Samuel for the first few years, a little bit, but she was too young to really understand. Mm-hmm. And then about 2 years ago at his birthday, we planted a tree when the year he was born, and that tree has been growing and it's really cool. We call it our Samuel tree. And so we often go take a picture by the Samuel tree on his birthday. And a couple years ago, it was the first time she really grabbed onto what that meant and that she had a brother. And so we had to walk through really the last couple of years have been walking through grief in a different way with her that we didn't expect, because she never met him. But she brings him up a lot. Anytime there's we buy something and it's in a 4-pack, you know, it's mommy, daddy, Anna, and one for Samuel, you know, like she just keeps him alive and in the memory in a beautiful way.
Yeah.
Like, what do you say to someone who tells you their child has died? But we love how she keeps him part of our family and keeps that memory strong. And
there still seems to be an innocence around children that as they deal with death, there's a sadness, but it doesn't seem like as much as a fear maybe that you get from adults. And so I know for myself personally, like, I lost my dad the same year that my very first child was going to be born. And so we just vowed we were going to keep his memory alive by talking about him a lot. And so now my kids will, out of the blue, and this is just my personal thing, I don't talk about heaven as much as in the new creation, is what I like to say, because I like to emphasize, like, God is coming to resurrect the dead and he's going to come back to live with us. And so very much my kids are always keeping that in conversation. Yeah. They're like, in the new creation, when we get to be with grandpa, like, what do you think this is? And they're just very free. And it almost catches me off guard because I taught them that, or we talk that way. And then you're just having like a normal conversation and they bring that up and you're like, there's not a fear of death for them, because we've shared with them, like, we have a blessed hope. Like, there's a reuniting. There's there's a good part of it that maybe so much of the world is so fearful, and we see around us like the mourning of death because we've made it such a negative thing, where that is what makes us different as Christians.
Yeah, and it is really weird how it has changed my, like I have no fear of dying or death or any of that, because it's like, I'll get to see my son again and spend time with him, and I'm so excited about that. I should be more excited than that about being in heaven with Jesus. But there, you know, and I feel guilty about that sometimes. But the thought of hugging my son, hearing him laugh, I've never got to hear my son laugh. You know, like those are the thoughts that get me excited about heaven. And I like that it has my daughter thinking about heaven that way too and having her excited about it.
I hope like some of the points even today are something that can be carried further. And I just appreciate, Zach, your ability to just say to get it out, but also to engage a church community, but engage the Lord. I think there's an opportunity to tell the Lord you're angry, you're upset, you're sad. And I think a lot of times people are fearful as if like God's waiting to strike them dead the minute they disagree with him.
Right.
But I always say this, my God has big enough shoulders to take your complaints. Like he's not going to diminish into a corner and so terrified by the fact that you're mad at him or you do not like the plan that has transpired. So like going to him in prayer and knowing that, you know, Psalm 34:18 says the Lord is close to the brokenhearted. He rescues those whose spirits are crushed.
Yeah. One of the lessons that was really hit me over and over during the early stages of this grief was remembering Jesus on the cross was pleading, take this cup from me.
Yeah.
Father, Father, why have you abandoned me? He was in agony and not happy with the plan.
Yeah.
Jesus was sinless. So if he could do that, I should feel the freedom to share those same thoughts and concerns and hangups and frustrations with God without feeling like he's going to smite me or like my faith has failed. If I say, take this from me, I can't handle it. Like God's shoulders are big enough to handle that. I feel like, you know, Jesus is my yoke is easy, my burden is light. So if my faith is telling me it's more complicated than that and there's things I need to be doing better to grieve the more appropriate way, I'm probably misunderstanding my faith because I don't think our faith should be a heavy burden during grief. There's a time and a season to focus on grief that can't and shouldn't be skipped over because you think there's other duties or obligations that are more important. Like it's a season that you have to put everything on hold and be okay with grieving. Like grief is a holy thing and don't cheat that season.
Very much so. And if your God is one who cannot bear your emotion, I think, or you feel fearful of being who you are, that is not a relationship. That's a religion. Mm-hmm. And what we have in the Lord Jesus is a relationship. And exactly what you said, like he has experienced every emotion without sin. And so then it goes on in Hebrews to say, so we can boldly enter that throne of grace. We could run to him, no matter how angry, we could run to him because it's a relationship. And so thank you for those words. Thank you for sharing your story. I have loved knowing the story for the amount of years that I've known you, but also the fact that through it, that hopefully someone else feels heard, seen today as a father, that maybe we don't talk about fathers dealing with that sort of grief of the loss of a kid, but it's real. And just know that other dads out there are going through the same thing you are. So try to find them, talk to them, look for them.
There's a club of men who have lost children that I think would love to talk about it with other men who are going through it.
Thank you, Zach, for sharing with us today. And thank you for listening. We just encourage you to continue to engage in all the other parts of the Facing Fatherhood podcast series.
Don't stop your journey here. Check out the accompanying World's Biggest Small Group Study. Text the word GROW, that's G-R-O-W, to 67101.